This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Montgomery working from the stretch. The pitch to Herrera is hit deep to left field. Herrera has just won it with a walk-off big fly into the Pirates bullpen.
How about that, baby? Cardinals get a win last night. Ricky on the call. You heard it right here on 104.1 FM KMOX and the free Odyssey app. And the Cardinals will get back at it tonight. 5:50 for the pregame show, 6:45 first pitch. You will be listening tonight and see if the Birds can win another series with a victory tonight. They do that. They are 9 games over .500. Will they go 10 games over after this? It is the Gas House Gang. Nate Gatter is in with me, Chris Ranji. We are going to talk to Tom Stillman, chairman of the Blues, at 12:30. But we got plenty of time to talk about these Redbirds who continue to get wins. We continue to see shirtless 20 and 30-year-olds out in right field as the tarps off movement continues. But let's talk first about this team, man. They are finding ways to do it. They are finding ways to win close games. So far this season, in one-run games, the Cardinals are 10-3. In extra innings, they are now 7-1 with that win last night. They're over .500 in the 9-inning games as well. So this is a team, Nate, that is just, they're getting it done. Whether or not they are getting it done by just barely getting enough pitching or just barely getting enough offense, the results are there, and they're winning games right now.
Yeah, and they're bailing out themselves in some ways. This is the perfect scenario in many ways for a front office, right? Because as a front office, what you're thinking is, for the first half of the season, the first two-thirds of the season, I want to gather as much information as I possibly can about the team that I have to inform my decision-making. And when I think about the Cardinals, especially the numbers you just mentioned in one-run games, 10-3, extra innings, 7-1, what I hear is at least a touch of unsustainability, right? Anytime a team is that successful in close games, because the idea is that unless you have a truly elite bullpen, say, or something else you can point to, and maybe it is something innate in them. Maybe it is their resilience. Maybe it is the young guys not really knowing when they're beaten yet or something like that. Maybe that is part of it. But unless you can point to something objective, generally speaking, how you do in one-run games is going to be up more to fortune and chance, especially over a small sample size.
Yeah, that plays out at the end of the season a lot, too. If you see teams that are just extraordinarily good in one-run games one year, the following year, they're probably not.
It's not right. It's not necessarily something that is sustainable because it's not coming from any objective place. Most of it is the fact that you're just playing not that many of them as compared to the 162. A small percentage of those are going to be one run, two run games. And those games are just going to be decided by one or two plays that could be one or two bounces or a little fluke deflection or whether you get a call on a corner or whatever. Those things could play a massive role. But when I look at this Cardinals team, I think the biggest deficiency is the bullpen and the depth in the bullpen, and yet they're still winning these close games. And the good news is the bullpen is generally, I don't want to say it's easy, nothing is easy, but as compared to starting pitching or your lineup, the bullpen is much more malleable during the season and heading toward a trade deadline, and a scenario where if the Cardinals are in the neighborhood of 10 games above .500, I don't think it would be unreasonable at all, at very reasonable kind of bargain shopping prices, for the Cardinals to try to add one or two relievers as we get deeper into the summer. In fact, I would go as far as to say I think it would be incumbent upon this front office to do so. Not because if this Cardinals team doesn't make the playoffs or if this Cardinals team doesn't win as many games as possible, it's a failure. But because when you have a group of young players like this who are exceeding expectations, who are winning, who are showing they know how to get it done in close games, you have to show them that the organization is going to support them.
See,
that the organization is going to be right there with them. You have to show that you're invested in giving them the pieces to push this over the edge down the stretch rather than wither on the vine.
That's the one thing, and I forgot who brought this up to us. It was a couple of weeks ago, and it was the first person to suggest it, because I have been just, as a fan, my focus has been, this is everything that happens this year is about getting them ready for next year.
Very reasonable.
And for the year
position.
After that.
Very reasonable.
Yeah. So, like, if they win in the meantime, great. But it's all about growth. I keep talking about growth and development because that's what 2026 is. It's sort of, in a way, it's not just a continuation of last year. It's a continuation plus. So it's last year, but even better, the way I see it. That we're supposed to be getting the most possible out of Jordan Walker and Gorman if he's going to be around, and J.J. Weatherholt's getting major league experience. So it's about figuring out what those guys are so they can make better informed decisions for next year and beyond. However, and I cannot off the top of my head remember who brought this up to us a couple of weeks ago on this show. And what he said was, you know, sometimes you have to do it for the players in the clubhouse. And it means make a deal at the trade deadline and tell them, hey, you guys played really well, better than we expected. This is our reward to you. We are going to give you some reinforcements because you're doing this. And that sends a message to the guys there that if you play well, we're going to do what we can to the best of our ability to help you out. And I think that is an important message to send. And secondary to that is, or maybe 1B to that, is to the fan base. You know, you tell the fans, if this team is good, we're going to try to help it out so that it can win. Now, that doesn't mean you trade all your prospects because you think that this is your one piece away from winning a World Series. No, you don't do that. But it should be, as you said, fairly easy. Easy is not the right word, but it's of all the things you can do
doable
at the deadline, picking up a reliever is a thing you can do. And it just so happens for this team, it has been the weakest part of the team so far. The bench has been not great. Starting pitching has been okay, and ERA in May is really good. It's like a top five ERA in May. If you want to get the more advanced numbers, the expected ERA is in the bottom 10. So that to me is a little worrisome because you think, all right, if that trend continues, then that means that they're going to start losing some games here. But I'm not worried about that right now. What I do know is they're pitching or getting the results from the starting rotation. Bullpen isn't doing well enough with the exception of a couple of guys, and the offense is doing well enough to win. So if we get to this spot in the end of July and they're close, do you make a move? I think maybe you do, just to show the players on the roster that you're willing to help them.
I look at it the same as any other workplace, right? If you were a manager or you owned a small business and you had employees who were working especially hard, who were having success, who were exceeding expectations, it's going to be important to do something to reinforce that as a positive.
It's morale.
Right? And maybe that means something as drastic as a raise. Maybe it means something as minimal as a pizza party, right? And this year, the trade deadline for the Cardinals is probably going to look more like pizza party reward,
sure,
than raise reward, right? They can't throw out the entire plan because this team has been good for 50 games, right? They have to be disciplined, and they will be disciplined. But I do think the players have earned something, and they have to see that because, again, this doesn't take anything away from the start that they've had, but there are signs of unsustainability numerically all over this team, right? You mentioned one of them with the you know, FIP numbers against the ERA numbers, meaning how are they pitching based on the sort of objective pitching metrics.
Yeah, the expected ERA.
Right.
And I know a lot of people hear those numbers. I go, ugh, I don't want to hear
it.
Right,
right. We don't need to go into it.
I get that. I get that.
We don't need to go into it. But even just the one-run games, I think people intuitively can understand if you're winning more than 70% of your one-run games, if you're winning almost 90% of your extra inning games, there's probably a little bit of that is guided by fortune as much as it is skill. So even if we're not saying they're bad in one-run games or they should be bad, we're just saying they're probably not this good in one-run games or in extra innings because nobody is, especially a team that has a bullpen with some leaky spots in it. So I hope that they have that mindset that they need to show these guys. Because, again, as much as we talk about runway and development, what could be better for development than putting these young players in a division race in September? Maybe putting them in a playoff series. You know, even if it doesn't go anywhere, I think it'd be worth something. You're not going to pay a big price, but I would pay a marginal price to put these kids in that kind of situation because it's just going to make them better in a way that simply playing 162 major league games can't, right? It's about what do those games look like in August and September, and it would be great to maximize the leverage of those games because of how it can continue to energize the fan base, but more importantly, because of how it appreciates and develops the players.
Well, let me just say this. I think that if we get to a point of the season, if we are 2 weeks away from the end, middle of September, and this team is, even if it's a distant shot, if they are in the conversation, that is a successful year.
100%.
For this team, for 2026, that's successful. It would not be for probably 2028.
I mean, right now,
if we're talking about them being in the playoff conversation with a couple of weeks left to go and then they miss out 2 years from now, I think that would be sort of a failure. But right now, for what this season is supposed to be, that'd be a hell of a success.
And if we had talked before the season and said on May 20th, the Cardinals are 28-19, that's what? Top 1%? Top 0.5% of potential Cardinals outcomes for this year? I mean, nobody would have been talking about that as a realistic possibility 47 games in to be 9 games above 500. So they are dramatically exceeding expectations. And, you know, the development has been great. In every sense, you have to be thrilled with how this has gone. So all I'm talking about is just making sure that they feel that. And I think they're feeling it from the fans right now, right? They're feeling it from the city. They're feeling it from the crowd. There's more energy in that ballpark than there's been in a long time, even independently, you know, even among people who have their shirts firmly on their bodies. Oh. I think still, you know, they're feeling that appreciation and that level of excitement rise around this team. And so, you know, I hope that if the right deal is out there, and again, we're not going to be privy, right? If the trade deadline comes and goes and the Cardinals do nothing, despite being in a good position, we won't be privy to every conversation that Chaim Bloom had, and maybe the prices are just too high, right? Nobody is saying he should go out and sell off pieces that could be important to this team in the future just to try to bring in rental relievers or something. This
actually
is not
you
a
know
team.
What? Even if they are 2 games up, if they are in first place at the deadline, I still don't want them to do that.
Right. No, and there's no scenario.
Still, yeah.
No scenario. In some ways, the irony is, in some ways, the better this team plays, the less you want them to make any drastic moves, because the more excited you are about the core of this team year after year.
That's
after
exactly
year,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's the better they play, the more I want them to make small moves, but the less I want them to make big moves.
Nate Gatter, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. Why don't you tell us how you feel? Because we're streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And if you're watching the show, you know, at KMOX Sports, you can leave us comments and we'll get to some of them. There's a movement that is spreading around baseball, and it happened here in St. Louis. This is where it started. This is the epicenter, and not everybody likes it. We'll tell you what that is when we come back. On the Gas House Gang, Tom Stillman, chairman of the Blues, with us at 12:30 on KMOX. You know, yesterday on the Gas House Gang, or was it on the Chris and Amy show? It was on the Chris and Amy show. We talked to a couple of delightful young men, Caleb and Bryce, who are with the Stephen F. Austin Club baseball team, who started the whole tarps off thing on Friday, and it really picked up steam. And I don't think we need to explain to you what happened. But if you're just now crawling out from your cave, the Stephen F. Austin baseball team sitting in the outfield at the Cardinals game took all their shirts off. It was like 20 of them. And then the crowd grew. It became one section, then it was or half section, then it was a full section, and then three sections of people took all their shirts off and waving their shirts around, and it created a really cool environment at the ballpark. And this movement has spread. It is not just in St. Louis, which is where it started. It is now in Anaheim. It's in Philadelphia, in Tampa, in Detroit, in Seattle. They've been doing it at Coors Field. They tried to do it at San Diego, which was a disaster, but they tried. There was like 5 people, but still, they gave it a shot. So this baseball movement, maybe the most important baseball story of the last 5 days, is everybody taking their shirts off. And you really cannot argue against that, Nate Gatter, can you?
Well, I want to do 2 things here. First of all, I want to establish something that I think St. Louis fans don't know, because we are much more of a baseball city than we are a college football city. These guys did not come up with this. This was a nationwide craze among college students the entire fall in college football. The origination, I think Oklahoma State was first, but the idea was basically if your team really, really sucks and your student section is super boring as a result, just do this because it's fun and it like takes the attention off of the field and puts it on you, which is, you know, as we all know, that's like that's the thing now. If you're a young person, is to how to, you know, I can't just go to something and watch the game and enjoy the product that's there. I have to find a way to make this about putting attention on myself and so that I can post it on social media and I get all the attention. Now these guys brought it to St. Louis and to Major League Baseball. It had not happened in Major League Baseball or in St. Louis, but they did not come up with this idea. It's not an original concept. So when people are copying St. Louis, I guess they're copying St. Louis in a baseball context, but St. Louis already copied like dozens of schools where this happened in the fall in college football. I don't mind it. I'm not into it. When I go to a baseball game, like I go to a baseball game to watch a baseball game. If I wanted to keep score,
if I, like a dork,
no, I had to do that for. I got paid to do that for several years, and I don't want to do it anymore. Part of the fun is that you don't have to be locked in on every single pitch. But I just come to enjoy the whole experience. If I wanted to take my shirt off and swing it over my head wildly, I could do that anywhere. I could walk down the street outside our studio, and I could do that at least for a little while till the cops showed up. You know, I have no problem with people doing it. I'm glad they're enjoying it, especially because clearly Ollie and the players love it. I am totally fine with it. I have to say I'm just mystified by the appeal. I'm really shocked that people love doing it so much, and I'm really, really shocked that people love observing it so much.
Remember when yesterday I did this voice? I went, it started in college football. I was talking to Nate Gatter. That's who I was talking to.
Many people don't know that.
It started in college football. Man, you didn't start anything. Yeah, yeah. Well, guess what? It happened here in St. Louis, and for that, the Budweiser Toast of the Week is presented by Budweiser. For 150 years, this Bud's for you. And this Bud right here, this bad boy right here, is for the Stephen F. Austin baseball club team, who came into St. Louis, showed us how to have a good time. And then all the people who saw them having a good time, all the St. Louisans, all the Cardinals fans, who said, you know what, I'm going to join in on that fun, because baseball is fun. And anybody who hates this is stupid. And that's why the Cardinals and at Busch Stadium, we are now officially the originators of Tarps Off. I don't care what anybody in college football says. So this is to you, this Bud right here, this Budweiser Toast of the Week, presented by Budweiser. For 150 years, this Bud's for you. St. Louis and the Stephen F. Austin baseball team. And anybody who disagrees is wrong and bad. What do you think, Nate?
Very reasonable.
Hey, let's talk to the chairman of the Blues, Tom Stillman.
Take your tarp off.
Maybe he is. We haven't talked to him yet. He might be.
Tarps off at the Blues.
Well, we're going to talk. We are going to talk to him about that. We'll see what he thinks
at that point.
Let's do it. Tom Stillman, Blues chairman, joins the show. The Gas House Gang returns in a moment on KMOX. It is the Gas House Gang until 1 o'clock every weekday from noon until one, unless there's a Cardinals game like tomorrow. And it is time to go to the Quiver River Electric guest line today. We welcome in chairman of your St. Louis Blues, Tom Stillman, is with us on the show today. Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing great. We are in the middle of enjoying baseball season, and most of us are enjoying the Tarps Off movement, which I'm sure you have well seen by now, and you know you've seen what's been happening at Cardinals games. What would it take to get this at a Blues game? I know it's cold. I know it's the winter, but why not have this happen at Blues games too?
I'm sure that I know our guys are looking into it and figuring out, you know, how that might work. I don't know if you've seen over the last couple years. Steve Ott's son Maverick has kind of led that movement among younger kids. but whether it could move to, the older generation, I imagine something will happen.
Yeah, Tom, my father-in-law's favorite blue was Steve Ott when he was playing, and then when he moved up to the coaching staff. And I think over the last couple of years, Maverick has taken that spot as favorite blue because he just can't get enough of that kid hyping up the crowd, waving his shirt around.
And it's so funny, if you see Otter, you would see him on the bench just trying to look professional, and I'm not going to laugh at that. I'm going to look at that.
So now the hockey season is still going on. The Blues missed out on the playoffs, and that was I'm sure for you as well, a highly disappointing season for all of us who were watching the team and thought that after the previous year and taking Winnipeg to seven games, that there'd be a lot of promise for the 25-26 campaign. As you look back on it, what are your thoughts on this past year and why things went the way they did?
Believe me, there's been endless meetings and analysis of all that. I think it's just primarily a team that didn't come together early enough. That was more individuals playing rather than playing for the team. I did think expectations going into the season, I was concerned, were a little too high in the market in St. Louis area, but we still should have done much better than we actually did.
One thing that did happen that was pretty positive is in the NHL draft, the lottery that took place, a couple of weeks ago, the Blues are going to get three first rounders here. You got picks 11, 15, in the late rounds or the late part of the round as well. So as we know, the assets, the draft assets, the Blues are going to get, what does that do for Armstrong and Steen?
You know, it depends a lot on what we actually end up doing. I mean, at a minimum, we're to get some good players at 11 and 15 if we stay there. You don't know what Doug and the crew might come up with, or, again, we get good players at 11 and 15. You know, most likely you're selecting there. Those players aren't going to be joining the team and making an impact for a few years. So it's not something that is an immediate change at the NHL level, but you always want to be building your prospect pipeline, the assets in the organization.
Tom, obviously this is stepping off the ice, but one of the big changes that fans are going to experience at the NHL level next year, one way or the other, is going to be the non-existence of FanDuel Sports Network and what changes with television broadcasts, which were, up 25% last year, top five of any U.S.-based NHL teams in TV ratings. So the level of support there from the market was still very, very strong. What are some of the leading options right now that you can tell us about for how teams or fans are going to be able to watch broadcasts next year?
We're still surveying all the options, and in the end, it may turn out to be that it won't be just one option, but more than one avenue going forward. So, we continue to work on that and, try to get it nailed down well before the season, and then we'll have some announcements to make.
Considering that level of support, that the Blues are one of the most viewed teams across the NHL, at least in the United States, is there any possibility of going back to having separate TV and radio broadcasts with how people are tuning in and, the financial support that's there for the TV broadcast? Or do you see the simulcast continuing for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, that kind of assumes that was, a financial decision, and really that was not a significant part of it. Really doesn't save that much. So I see us most likely continuing with simulcasts. We continue to learn, how to adjust things, how to do it better, and we'll continue work on that. But I think we'll probably continue with that approach.
Blues chairman Tom Stillman is with us here on KMOX. And as Nate mentioned, the TV ratings really good for the Blues. What does that say about the fan base? What does it say about St. Louis that the ratings are there like that, or for the organization itself?
You know, our television ratings have been in the top four or five in the U.S. for years, and it says that we have a dedicated fan base that want to see their team play, and that they stick with us even when we're not at our best and not necessarily contending for a cup, but while we are retooling and rebuilding. So I mean, it just shows how fortunate we are to have the loyal fan base that we have.
What's been your biggest point of emphasis personally for this offseason?
Well, obviously, we have a transition going, with Doug moving to president and Alex Steen coming in as GM. So there's, we want to make sure that that goes correctly. But it's also straightening out this tendency that we've had the last few years of slow starts and then coming out in the end when, we're pretty much out of it. I mean, we made it 1 year, but we can't do that. We can't chase seasons. We can't be satisfied with these, supposed moral victories. We tried hard in the end. We've got to start out and understand that the first game is as important as the last game.
Does the organization feel like it has a handle on why that has happened? Why it has taken some time to really get going before the play starts to pick up?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of study of it and a lot of work on how we change it. And, I think Monty and working with Alex and the whole team, I think we'll be in a better position this year.
Tom Stillman, Blues chairman, is with us, and also the NHL and the Players Association did announce what the salary cap is going to be for the upcoming season of $104 million, the salary floor of $76.9 million. That midpoint's right in that $90 million range. With knowing what the cap is going to be, how does it affect what the offseason plan is going to be?
It doesn't probably affect us as much as it would if we were at a different stage. If we were at the stage where, we're contending, we're up at the top of the league, and we just need a piece or two to put us over, we'd be much more conscious of that cap and how are we going to work with that. At a time when we are building and developing young players and bringing them on, it is not ever present over your shoulder. It certainly does give us room if we want to do things. We shouldn't have trouble being within it this year.
And as we wrap things up here a bit, I know that leading into the Cardinals season, and this is going back to the television conversation, that leading into the Cardinals season, there were fans who were worried, with everything that went down with FanDuel and it going away, not knowing if the broadcasts are going to be on. And the team said, well, the worst case scenario, you will be able to watch the team. We just don't, know exactly how that's going to happen yet. Is it the same sort of guarantee you'll give the Blues fans as we are obviously many months away from, the next season coming up here, but games will be accessible? Yes.
Yes. We will have games. The fans will be able to see the games, and they may have more than one option as they do that. But I don't see a scenario in which we won't be broadcasting our games. We'll be out there.
Tom Stillman, Blues chairman, we always appreciate our conversations with you. Thank you for being with us today, and let us know what the final word is on tarps off at Blues games and how it's gonna make its way there.
All right, we'll see how that goes.
Tom Stillman joining us here on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. I know, Nate, that you hate it.
I know you hate tarps off. I do not. All I've said is
you think that we shouldn't be doing it.
And I'm surprised that so many people like consuming it from the outside, even if they're not the types of people to participate in it.
You said,
yes,
before the show started, you said, come on, St. Louis, you're better than that.
I did not say that.
I swear you did.
So, okay, I do want to get one thing out there because we're showing on our stream a comment from a fan who said, who the heck is this Nate guy? He's not part of the Gas House Gang. Get him the heck out of here.
That's right.
And
but there was also a guy who said you're the voice of reason.
Yes, yes, which is great. Those were two comments were 10 minutes apart, by the way, which is the beauty of broadcasting. But I just want to note that the commenter who said, I'm not part of the Gas House Gang, get him out of here, I thought that was a fair and funny comment. And our producer, Matt Pajeski, who is
a dictator
and a fascist, took that comment down and banned him. I did not participate in that in any way. In fact, I was laughing about the comment and appreciated it. So all comments and concerns on that should be directed to fascist Matt Pajeski.
You cried during the break
about
it.
That's true. That's true.
He's being a whiny little you-know-what.
It's a safe space.
This is that's right. We will not have any criticism of our baby boy, Nate.
That's right.
Don't you dare say anything bad about that. Join the show by watching on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Leave us a comment on any of those platforms. Find KMOX Sports on all of them. Got some Billikens news, potentially, that we could bring to you and want to get Nate's thoughts on it. Yeah, that's right. We're doing our Budweiser toast. We can do our Budweiser toast to the Billikens, too, because the Billikens had a fantastic season. We'll get Nate's thoughts on the Billikens and their schedule, which is starting to take shape. That is next on KMOX.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Nate hates Savannah bananas, too? Well, I can't say anything to you.
You
know.
You,
What's wrong with the bananas?
There's nothing wrong with the bananas.
They're coming back. I got tickets.
It's the same as tarps off.
Fun.
I don't mind people doing it. I don't mind that people like it. It's just not for me. And I went. I went with a good attitude to the bananas when they were here at Busch Stadium. And it was a fun atmosphere. Like, there were a lot of people there. And I went on the Glover show like the next day or the day after and talked about it. All I thought about the whole time was just like that this was, it felt so... It felt like somebody was taking social media content and putting it into real life in that they were going pure quantity over quality. And that has nothing to do with the baseball, right? Like, the baseball is an entertainment thing. It's like you don't go to the Harlem Globetrotters and say, I don't know if they were taking the most efficient shots out there. You know, like, that's not the point of it. It was just a lot of mediocrity. It was like the videos, the music, all the sideshow stunts, it was all... It was like they didn't do anything especially well as an entertainment product, but they were like, if we give you massive sensory overload, your 8-year-old is going to love this for the same reason they love YouTube channels that cut the scene every half a second, because it like basically fries your sensors in your brain to the point that you love it. It's just like it's basically getting you high. And that's the idea of it. But there's no real quality to it. That was why for me, it wasn't the right thing. But I have nothing against anybody liking any of those things. They're not hurting anybody.
You don't have any problem with anybody doing it. It's just you're better than them.
No, I'm not better than them. I just have different preferences than them.
The bananas, they're fun. It's just fun. It's fun. It's a couple of hours. There's a clock. It's if the game ends at this time. They do a bunch of stuff. I think it's a lot of fun.
I will be interested.
And you're a real
curmudgeon. No, I'll be interested in your take on it after you go.
I went. Like, I went last year.
Yeah. So did you feel like, in what ways was it different than your expectations going in any way?
I think it's about what I expected. Yeah. I mean, it's silliness, and that's the whole point, is that baseball is, for somebody who, if somebody just, you're 25 years old, and somebody plucked you out of another country and you'd never seen baseball in your life, and they said, here, watch this, you'd probably go, this is stupid, this is boring. You'd probably feel that way. But you know, I grew up with it, so I love it. But I recognize that it's you're not supposed to think about it as baseball. You just think about it as an entertainment product, and it accomplishes that.
Yeah. And I I don't think it is my responsibility to be entertained by something simply because other people find it entertaining.
Well,
in the same
to...
way that I don't impose that on others, right? Well, like, if I like a particular thing, it's not anybody else's job to like it. If I sit down and read a book and think it was really enjoyable, I don't impose that on anyone else.
That's right. I think you are just trying to yuck my yum. Tell us about the Billikens. It looks, buddy, like they are going to have a pretty good non-conference schedule coming up here. There is reporting that there will be a home-and-home with DePaul University in Chicago. So there will be a game this year and then the following year. Again, they're going to do the home-and-home thing. There is the game against Mizzou, which will happen. Stanford, ASU, potentially one of those two. St. Mary's. High Point looks like they're going to play a game against High Point. So they got so much criticism about their non-conference schedule not being particularly good last year. Well, now it looks like the Billikens have put together something a little stronger.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, you're trying to squeak out any of those Power Four games that you can, and they managed to find a couple of them. At the very least, they're going to have that Stanford or ASU. And then a bunch of the higher end mid majors. Or the kind of fringe teams, because I don't feel like calling the A-10 or the American mid-majors is really fair. But they're also not Power Fours in terms of the resources that they have or the depth in their leagues. So they're kind of in this weird little middle ground. And those schools teaming up with each other to try to bolster each other's resumes, whether that's High Point or St. Mary's, or, I mean, you could almost put DePaul in that bucket too, because the bottom half of the Big East is much more mid-major than it is high major. And I think a home and home for those two makes an enormous amount of sense. And that's a great thing. I get why in the NIL era, programs need to play some of these neutral site games. But SLU playing, South Florida in Chicago or whatever it's going to be, that doesn't do a whole lot for me, right? But a home and home in a, Midwest kind of regional city rivalry, a couple of schools that have some history with each other on the court that have a lot in common.
Yeah, that's the appeal.
Catholic
because
institutions.
DePaul's not a particularly great program and it hasn't been for decades.
Right, but still, they're on the upswing with Chris Holtman there.
Yeah.
And in some of the real college basketball stat head folks who put together these, try to do essentially Ken Pom style ratings before the season even starts, put both DePaul and SLU in a similar bucket of being potentially in that, I don't know, maybe 45 to 65 in the country type of range. And in some ways, DePaul not being overly impressive the last few years is exactly why it makes sense for SLU to play them. Because if SLU beats DePaul by double digits, you get to say, all right, yeah, the A-10 is not as strong as the Big East, but SLU played a team that finished, around middle of the Big East or wherever DePaul might be and beat them. And that's a significant, measuring stick. Same with a team in the American or in the WCC or with High Point. It's all about measuring these conferences against each other, and you can get a real boost for the entire league out of that.
Well, nothing is finalized, but it does look like, or it's in progress, where the Blue Demons would come to Chaffetz Arena this year, and then the following season, the Billikens would go play there in Chicago. So
huge credit to Josh Schertz and his staff,
be cool.
Because it's not easy
work. That Mizzou game.
Yeah, that's a coup,
fun.
And it's going to be a lot of fun for, I think, the entire region.
Nate Gatter, old man yelling at clouds, appreciate you. You old stick in the mud, you old wet blanket, you old fun sponge. It's good to see you, man.
We all have our preferences, Ranj. I don't comment on yours.
You don't want to.
No,
you'll be
I'm
in
scared.
Serious trouble.
I've never opened that door.
Gas House Gang will be back on Friday because tomorrow we've got Cardinals baseball during the day. So we will talk to you Friday on the Gas House Gang on KMOX.